All right, everybody, welcome back to The Takedown. As always, I'm Nick Greiner, and with me today, one of my good Twitter pals. I would say that we've been Twitter buddies for a few years now, and I'm going to let him, we have a lot to talk about today. I'll let him introduce himself, and we'll get right into it. We're going to talk about training, nutrition, his, I would say, Kian, one of the things with you, buddy, and I'll let you take over here in a second, that I identify most with the lifestyle stuff is your take on the seasonal and, you know, eating for that type of a situation. And I'm really interested to hear you talk about that. Welcome to the show, Kian. How are you, sir?
Thanks very much, Nick. It's great to be on the show.
I'm great to have you. Yeah, man, it's great to have you. You know, a lot of the times talking with behind the scenes with people, you know, you get to know them a little bit more, get to know you a little bit more. And I think we have a lot of similar takes on a lot of things. You know what I mean? Outside of just lifestyle stuff. So, I'll tell you what, brother, I'll let you take over here. Just tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of like your journey, because I think that that's what people want to hear most about.
Yeah, so I'm from Waterford in Ireland. It's like southeast of Ireland. It's very seasonal. So in the summer, it can be nice, but it's like it rains pretty much all the time. But the winter, then it rains even more. So it's kind of depressing from a seasonal perspective. But you get used to it, I suppose, when you grow up with it. So yeah, as a kid, I was known as Chubby, actually, in school, a nickname, you know. So you can talk these days, it wouldn't be allowed, I'd say, you know, the bullying thing or whatever. But yeah, so I was kind of always struggled with weight from a very young age. And I did, like, sure, we didn't know. We thought low fat was the approach to take when it was trying to lose weight. So I was eating a lot of breads and, you know, things like that. And I think diet is different today, obviously, than it was back then. Like, I'm 45 years old now, so I'm a kid who grew up in the 80s, essentially. And it was great, fun times and all that, but I struggled with weight. And then when I was a teenager, I became very self-conscious. So I got into running, weight training, taekwondo, lots of different things. I was a good swimmer as a kid. And I actually got to a good level at taekwondo. I got into the weights and got very fit, very, very lean. And the approach I took was starvation, essentially. So it gave me issues with food from a very young age, like that. I thought, yeah, in order to get in shape, you have to starve yourself. And, you know, from there, then I, you know, went to college. The training took a kind of a back seat when I got to college. You know, going to the pub was more popular, meeting girls was more important. And so I was still doing a bit of training, but then when I got married, had kids, the weight just started to creep up over time. And by the time I was 30 then, I was about 18 and a half stone, which is 256 pounds, I think. Do you do in pounds or?
Yeah, that's yep. Right, yep.
Yeah, something like that. And about 18 stone if you're working stones. 18 a bit. And so at that point, I was kind of like, I was playing squash. I was able to do lots of push-ups. I was strong and eating relatively healthy, but did have junk food in the diet a lot as well. But it just crept up over the years. So about a decade, I put on that much weight. And then when I was about 35, then I just got into circuit training and got into a group where the paleo diet was kind of a thing that was happening at the time. So then I started just kind of cutting. It was like you're naturally cutting out a lot of carbs out of the diet at that point.
Right.
And so when I started eating like that, I was eating lots of fats, and it kind of screwed up my mind a bit because I thought low fat was the way it was the approach to take. So it kind of woke me up a little bit in terms of, you know, you can actually eat fats and healthy fats and still lose weight. So over a couple of years then, that weight started to come off. And then I got into kettlebells so I was in this group doing circuit training, got relatively fit that way. And in the corner of a room, there was people doing this kettlebell training with these big balls with handles on it. And I was there, that looked really boring, what they're doing, this repping out, you know, doing this kind of thing over and over. One of the guys said, why don't you try it out? We have competition coming up. So I was about 95 kilos at the time. And I entered my first competition using 216 kg kettlebells. And so when I did that, I kind of got hooked on it.
Mm-hmm.
And really started taking the diet seriously then. So about 2 years after picking up the kettlebells, I went into my first national championships, and the guy who was directly next to me competing against me was huge. Like, I was 95 kilos still at the time. I wasn't the, you know, I was in good shape, but not brilliant shape. So the guy next to me then, he actually tore his glute while we were competing.
Yeah.
Wow. And I kind of ended up winning that competition. And I was like, this shouldn't, this, you know, this is weird. So then I got qualified for a European competition. And I started training really hard for that. And in that weight category, then I came third in that competition. And that got me hooked then. And so then I started really taking the sport nutrition, you know, taking that into account. And I got myself down to a different weight category for the following year, which was sub 85 kg, which is another 10 kg less than what I was, which is like 22 pounds less than that. And I thought I was in good shape at that point, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, you're still kidding yourself. So really what I started doing is just taking the paleo style diet very seriously, looking at, you know, when I was eating carbs, just having the bare amount, minimum amount for training. Because I still didn't really know much about keto and things like that.
Yes.
And I ended up traveling to the Arnolds actually in Columbus, Ohio. And I won that competition, the Pan American Championship. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm actually good at this, you know?
Wow. What year was this? When you were in...
This was like 2014, maybe.
Wow.
Yeah. Maybe awesome. 2014, I think it was. So it's a long time ago now, but still fresh in my mind, you know, because it's like a major moment.
Yeah.
And then the following year, then I was actually competing in the world championships that year and came fourth. I just barely missed out on medals. I was in Hamburg in Germany. And then the following year, then I really, really put knuckle down and I was running up mountains. I was doing everything I could do to get the cardio through the roof. And I won the following year. Then I won European championships in Bulgaria and won the world championships then in Dublin. And that was a big field of competitors, like 14 in that competition, which was great. Like, and you know, there was guys from Sweden, Germany, brilliant competition. And I won it like by maybe two reps, I think it was.
Wow.
Yeah. So with kettlebells, what the discipline I do is called long cycle. So it's basically clean and jerk. Okay. And you clean and jerk 224 kg kettlebells, which is the amateur category. And you lift them as many times as you can in 10 minutes. So I think I got 86 or 87 in that competition. 87 in that competition, and that was enough to win. Like, you know, so, so that, like, that's kind of the journey. And then after the kettlebells, I eventually then just started doing. I came out with the Don't Eat for Winter book after that, because I came up with that concept and put it into writing, and then to kind of demonstrate what it can do, I entered into some natural bodybuilding competitions, into the men's physique kind of category. So in the natural competitions where they test you for steroids. And
right, right.
And I won a master's in that as well. So it's kind of like, I still can't believe how that transformation happened. And I eventually got down to like 73 kg, which was another 10 kg lower than what I was competing at with the kettlebells for the bodybuilding competition. So in total, I lost, like, for that competition, about 40 kilograms, which is like 90 pounds or something close to that.
I'm excited to talk about that too, because I know you recently competed, right? That was just a couple of years ago, right?
Yeah, that was 2019. Yeah.
So you're 45. I just turned 45 a couple weeks ago, and I competed in my 20s, right? So I haven't done anything but, you know, fitness competitions or bodybuilding in 20 years. So I tell you what, let's talk about that in a second, but I would like to go through the Don't Eat for the Winter stuff. So kind of talk about that. I know that to me is I love the whole seasonal eating. You know, we talk about there's certain animals that make themselves fat because they're not going to be eating much. So let's get into that a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. So that concept was I had a friend who was a diabetic. And obviously she was telling me about carbs being a problem for her and the insulin response and all that kind of side of things. And it just was in my head based on the paleo diet and her condition like that. You know, what's the problem here? Why is there such a problem with carbohydrates? And it was just like looking at the window in the house, in the kitchen. And I have a few apple trees out in the back garden, and it was February and the trees were completely bare. So it's just like, you know, it's obvious that, and then you just think about that and do a kind of a mind experiment on it. You know, what cards are actually available in March in nature? You know, if you're from a seasonal climate, zero, essentially, you know, zero. So then I was thinking, like, with the food pyramid, we're told to eat, you know, several portions of cereals and bananas and fruits and things like that every day. And even all year long, even though we evolved or adapted in nature where carrots just don't exist in at that time of year, besides what you could have collected and stored and right, that didn't rot or whatever. So I just put into a spreadsheet, like I went through some websites showing foods in season and put into a spreadsheet the glycemic index of all these foods. And it came out with a lovely curve where there's a height of sugar and starch available in nature in September, October. It kind of peaks around that time. So and then you have the complete opposite. It's like a sine wave, essentially. And it makes complete sense because, you know, the sun is, in summer and winter, it's a sine wave. The sun, you know, gets to its height and then drops and so on. So I just looked at that and went, this is, and then you can also plot fat as well. If you look at what happens to animals, fat also has a sine wave, but it's not as pronounced as carbohydrates. So animals get fat. And if you look at the different species that, you know, are out in nature, like deer, even people think squirrels get fat in winter and bears get fat in winter and creatures that hibernate and rest. But other creatures like deer also put up like 20% body fat in wintertime as well. Pigs, you know, lots of creatures, mammals especially, like that are in seasonal climates. So what's causing them to put on the body fat? Is it just that there's a high availability of food, or is it something else? Is it like, is it what's available, you know?
Yes.
So if you look at our modern diet, it's essentially a very, I call it autumn on steroids. It's like we have all these foods available all year long. But not only the natural form of those foods, also synthetic kind of versions of it where the nutrition is pulled out of it and you're left with the taste, you know? So processed fats, processed sugars, and so on and so forth.
Yes.
So my take on it was that I was looking at the foods that cause me to become hyperphagic, which is insatiable, wanting to eat more and more and more. And if you look at the foods that do that, it's, you know, it's typical things like biscuits, crisps, pizza, you know, food where you have rice and fatty kind of things, like, you know, Asian food, or, you know, that certain types of Asian food, like that's deep fried or whatever.
Yes.
You know, so all those different types of foods cause you to be like, even though you can eat a ton of the stuff, you still have room for more, you know. And Christmas time, you see that, like, you'd open a box of chocolates and the whole tin is gone after, you know, drinking it with a cup of tea or after dinner or whatever. So it's, for me, it was like there's a lowest common denominator here. And I was blaming carbs initially at first completely, but from later on, from seeing, like, from training and bodybuilding and seeing that you can actually eat carbs with low fat for certain types of things, that the lowest common denominator is the carb and fat combination together. And I think that's the real problem, because it's, you can't control your eating when you're triggering a natural response, you know, natural instinct to eat that way. And I think that we're seasonal creatures. We adapted to the climate. We can get a suntan in the summertime, and so we're definitely adapted to the seasons. We put on brown adipose tissue you know, to keep warm in the winter, and all of these things together shows that we're seasonally adapted creatures. And so we're triggered by foods that have the signature of autumn, you know, and that signature is high carb, high fat, low protein.
Yeah,
you know, that ties in with a lot of other diets that avoid that combination or that promote eating certain, you know, protein, like Ted Naiman, for example, does the protein energy ratio. So you lower the amount of energy food you eat, carbs and fats, and you increase the amount of protein you eat. And it's very similar in nature to the don't eat for winter concept.
Yes. I think, you know, one of the things that you had touched on, I hear the example a lot of like a white potato. I don't particularly like the taste of white potato. If you put butter on it, though,
yes,
I can eat seven of them. You know what I mean? And I think what you're saying makes a lot of sense, because I think personally, there are certain foods that I know that I can overeat very easily. I'm full in my stomach, but my brain is telling me I'm still hungry.
Yes.
And that's obviously a big problem. Even for somebody like me, who I've recently, and I want to talk to when we talk about your training for the fitness stuff, you know, even eating infrequently for somebody like me, very infrequently, I could overeat if I only eat once. Even if I'm only eating once, I can overeat. So I got to be careful with that. So what we're talking about here is the combo of the fats and carbohydrates together, which is driving overeating, right?
Yes, I believe so anyway. Yes. And if you look, like the root example of that would be pure sugar. Like some people probably would eat spoons of sugar, you know, directly out of a bowl, but it's not common.
Right.
People can keep sugar in their cupboards, in their kitchens for, you know, putting a spoon in a cup of tea. They're not eating a bowl of sugar all the time. And the same thing, you can keep butter in the cupboard as well, or in the fridge, and you're not eating spoons of butter, right? If you mix them together and fry them up or in a pan, you get toffee, you know, and you can overeat toffee, no problem, you know, and it's just the same ingredients. It's just that they're mixed together.
Yes.
And, you know, similar thing as the popcorn in the cinema, you have butter mixed with popcorn. Dry popcorn is not that tasty. You know, the melted butter, you're not going to drink a glass of that, but mix them together and it's the same combination, you know?
Yeah.
So there have been studies done on this to show that we value high carbs and fats combinations much more. Like they did a study that where they were kind of bidding on foods based on their value, if you know what I mean. So how much would you pay for this type of food? And carbs and fats were like much more than their individual, you know, the bits that make them up. Like, so there's something there, you know, and I think it's hormonal in nature.
Sure. Yeah. I saw recently Ted Naiman, he had put this graphic, and I read his book. It's a great book. I love it. Like I said, I think for most people now, at least in the West, because everybody is, I know in the United States, I think 70% of the population is overweight and almost half is obese. So as much of a fan as I am, let's say a ketogenic diet, I don't know that most people need to be adding fat, you know, to their ribeye. You know, I pretty much tell people, you know, you can get the fat from the animals that you're eating for the most part. You know, if you're overweight, if you're obese, I don't know that you need to be adding energy, you know. But Ted had this really cool graphic, and it was a picture of, I think, a half a cup of sugar and a half a cup of oil, you know, not much volume of that being around 2000 calories. And I think the other side was maybe it was 5 pounds of sweet potatoes, same amount of calories, you know what I mean? So I think, like you said, it's the combination of these macros, the fats and the carbs that are just driving us to overeat. And like you said too, like the protein, like do you think that most people, you know, you hear in the industry, people are saying, well, too much protein, you know, could be bad for your kidneys. I don't know anybody that's overeating protein.
No, I don't think it's possible. Like if you try eating breasts of chicken, it's very difficult to overeat it. You know, your body just says, no, that's enough, like straight away.
Right.
But with carbs and fats, it's not the same. You just can't, you can keep eating them and the body just won't stop. So there's some underlying function that's there, or some underlying drive, where we know that this combination of foods is something that it's aiding our survival for some reason, right? Yeah. So my belief there is you're eating this because your body knows winter is coming. So you need to put on body fat in order to survive. And there's two reasons you need body fat. One is for the insulation properties, and the other is for just having that backup energy supply that will get you through until the following summer, you know, when berries come back and, you know, different foods come back again.
Yeah.
And if you know, naturally in winter, people aren't going to be going outdoors as much, especially when there's snow and frost and things like that. They'd be staying next to the fire. They would have, you know, collected whatever food they can, nuts and so on and so forth. And they probably would have hunted when they needed to eat as well, you know?
Yes. Do you find personally that there are certain foods that will make you overeat? I mean, so that we talked about the carb and the fat combos, but I'll give you an example. Like for me personally, I don't know what it is about cheese, right? So for me, I cut out the only dairy that I have is I put like a teaspoon into my coffee, and I moved to decaf. I don't drink caffeinated coffee anymore. But if I eat a piece of cheese, listen, so Kian, I could have a nice piece of salmon, right? With let's say asparagus. If I eat that, I'll feel good, right? Like I'm good to go. But if I go into my refrigerator and I get a piece of, I'll get sharp cheddar, right? Like maybe like an ounce of it. Mm. If I eat it, it's
triggered.
Yeah. It just does. So is there anything for you personally that does that outside of like maybe the obvious stuff?
The cheese would do it as well, but like it depends on the cheese as well. Mm. Like if it's one of those fancy ones with cranberries in it and things like that, yeah. they're worse for me. Or yes. If you have chutney and a bit of cracker or something like that, you keep eating them. And I think they're like at Christmas time, you could put up a kilo just eating those, like no problem.
You know,
the most triggering food, if it's junk food, really, a bit of chocolate, or I know it's kind of obvious, but that, or if I have bread with some butter on it, like brown bread, you know, it's probably healthy, but if it's causing me to gorge, it's probably not that healthy in the long run to be, you know. So I can't have a little bit.
Yeah,
me either. Even knowing everything, if I eat like that, I just triggers, you know. So I find it very difficult to overcome even my own instinct, like even with the knowledge of what's going on.
I think that like when people talk about willpower, you know, I don't have great willpower. You know, I can say that, you know, like in the context of hunger, like bodybuilding, you know, I think maybe short term, you know, and you know this too. And we could talk about that. But like, so personally for me, when I was, and again, I was in my 20s, I was eating, you know, when I was cutting for a show, I would eat, and I competed 4 consecutive years, but each, so what I did was, it took me about 6 months. So 6 months out of the year, I probably weighed in the off season 235 pounds. And I would compete light heavyweight, which I had to be less than 190. And then, you know, I was probably dry as a bone. There was no water whatsoever, you know, right? So now I weighed myself the other day after training, after jiu-jitsu. And of course, I was probably 4 pounds light of water. I weighed 188. Well, in the context of bodybuilding, so when you were training when you were cutting for a show, what was your diet like for the most part?
Yeah, so I kind of had 2 phases. One was like, obviously you're trying to get as strong as possible, because if you're strong, you've got muscle, right? So to do that, I was on the core, like I was not too careful with the diet, but careful enough, like not to be eating those combos again, you know?
Right.
And I probably kind of was in around 14% body fat around at that phase, which is not light enough, like, you know, and sure. It's in good shape. So yeah. I had, like you can see the abs and so on and so forth, but it was still strong. Like, so it was kind of a sweet spot for strength. And I never really kind of got too heavy, that it was so much work. So I could have 12 weeks out then from the competition where I really kick in with the diet. And that was literally then low fat. Yeah, I went back to low fat, you know?
Yes.
So it was like green vegetables, rice, chicken breast, tuna, you can see the disgust on my face probably thinking about it.
Yes, for sure. But
it was the classic kind of way you'd eat. Like, so before that, it would be, you know, eggs and steak. And that was kind of to keep strong and, you know, but during the bodybuilding phase then. So I'd make it interesting with things like, you know, certain salads. And I would have like if I felt like I was getting weaker, I'd have a cheat, you know.
Sure.
And, you know, just satisfy that part of the, because you can go psycho with that diet, you know. It's tough, but you see the results very quickly. The weight starts falling off like almost immediately, and when you get to that point where you're seeing all the muscles that you worked hard to build and you see them being revealed, it's kind of that keeps you going, I guess, to get to the final phase. Like, but then on competition day, then you start your you know, eating the carbs and fats again. And my God, you eat for winter at that point, you know,
yeah.
Just to kind of get the volume back into the muscles and so on. But yeah, it was low fat, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think that there's one approach to not eating for winter. You can go the low fat approach, but it may not be the healthiest approach. I think that eating a keto style or more, you know, lower the carbs, up the protein and eat the natural protein, a natural fat that's there in the protein. Yeah. And you eat that way, you can maintain yourself. I think you undo winters by eating the ketogenic style diet. But if you want to get to that point where you're completely ripped, you have to change again. So like I was able to get the 14% body fat pretty much no problem eating like a paleo style,
right? With
low carb, not even very low carb, but you know, much lower than what you'd normally eat.
Right.
Maybe one carb meal a day, kind of thing. And then for bodybuilding, then cut out the other energy, which is fat, which is, you know.
Yeah. What was your body fat percentage when you were at your leanest?
At leanest, it was, my torso was 6.9%. So I did a DEXA scan for that, yeah. Which was tough going out for someone, like at my age, I was 43, I think, when I was competing. And tough going, I will say.
That's impressive. That is so impressive, man. That's really something. I love to see it because you know what I love? That thing that you have that you tweeted the other day, that kind of like that progression where when your face, you were smiling and that's, by the way, how do you even do that? Get that kind of that.
It's just some morphing tool.
Oh.
Yeah. Just some online thing, I think. Yeah.
I think that let me ask you this. So how were you hungry when you were training for your shows?
Never hungry, but it's a different type of, never hungry, but was wanting the kind of energy foods. It's a weird thing to try and explain because you actually, you're eating and you're never hungry. You have no appetite, you know, because you have, I think that's down to, because you've not triggered the carbon fat. So you're actually eating a more springtime style diet or summer style diet, where your body knows that it doesn't need fat to survive because it doesn't need that extra bit of body fat. Right. And it's only when you introduce those autumn type foods, then you go into the frenzy mode.
Yeah. What was your first, when you got done? So you competed twice, is that right?
I competed in 1 year, three competitions, and then second year, two competitions. So nice. Yeah, so five in total.
When you got done competing, what would you eat when you got off a stage?
Straight off, there's a place in Cork called Son of a Bun. It's like a burger joint with they're really delicious now, and triple stack burgers. So I did like two of them and maybe two portions of fries and milk. And the crazy thing is the next day, I should have just ate like that the day before the competition, because the next day in the gym, like you feel unbelievable, you know?
And you were probably so full, right? For your muscles probably were nice and round. You were probably no flatness whatsoever. And that, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up. So I know when I was competing, the guy that was helping me with my diet, so I weighed in about 4 hours before I had to get on stage. And when I got done weighing in, he gave me a box of Twinkies. And he was like, eat as many of these as you possibly can, right? And then within 20 minutes, I'm telling you, I had veins coming. I was a walking vein. I was so veiny and vascular, right? From all that. And I remember I took the week before my show when I was working. This was before I'd gone back to school, because it was in my early 20s. I didn't go back to school till I was 26. So I was working and I took that last week off before my show. And when I went back to work, my show was on a Saturday. My last show was on a Saturday. And I went back to work on a Monday, and the people that I work with were like, what? Look at me, like, because I was probably 10, 15 pounds heavier,
yeah,
but mostly water, you know what I mean? Walking around. That's something else too, that I don't know was probably the best thing to do, is, you know, just gorge after that, you know?
It's not the best thing to do. The problem is stopping then. So like after the last competition for me, I did put on quite a bit of weight because you're just letting yourself go a little bit, you know? And you have to find that happy medium, I think, where, you know, so I've been back on the defo thing for, you know, reasonably solid for the last year and a half, and kept my body weight in reasonable area, you know. So it's not like, you can see my face, it's not the way it used to be, but I'm strong now. I'm lifting really well, and chin ups and squats and all that kind of stuff. So it's, I'm enjoying having the strength and feeling good as well, you know.
You train at home, right? You have like a gym at home?
Yeah, it's right next to me there.
There you go.
Man cave at the moment, yeah.
There you go, man.
That's awesome. Yeah.
So right now you're what's your diet and training out now? So you're training at home and you're eating. How's your diet now?
My diet is good. Like, so step basically defo at the moment. So I keep my carbs to like one meal a day. So in the morning times, it could be eggs, bacon, that kind of thing, steak, could be whatever. And then lunchtime, it's typically a salad, fish. And then in the evening time, then I'll have some carbs with the meal. So that could be sweet potato or whatever, you know. And what I do is high fat in the morning, low fat in the evening time. And I find that I'm getting everything I need nutritionally out of the diet, and I'm never triggering that gorge instinct, which means that I'm not hungry anytime. I'm never hungry.
Good.
Which is huge for me, because I was living in a constant state of hunger when you're eating, you know. And what I do, I guess I indulge every now and again. Like, so I think that this winter combination of carbs and fats together is something that's there, part of humanity, is part of something that we should enjoy. But if you know that, if you know, like, so when you go out for a meal with your family, that's a good time to have it, you know. In the autumn time, when the fruits are all out in the trees, like apples, and you know, you can make the apple pies that granny used to make,
right?
You know, and it's to enjoy those things, not make the, if you restrict your diet and have none of that stuff ever, that's when you have these rebounds, I think. But just have them now and again, but understand that it's going to trigger a gorge in you. So don't have them available in the house is a good tip, and go out to have it when you want to have enjoy a meal with loved ones or whatever. So I think that's a good approach.
I agree wholeheartedly. You know, I always say that, because people will ask me, especially in clinic, you know, they'll ask me things like, you know, do you have a recipe book or a diet book or anything like that? Or, and I always tell people, I'm very low maintenance. My wife and I are very low maintenance with food. I mean, I could eat egg whites every day, all day, you know, or tuna, you know. I don't know that I need a lot of variety, but you're right though. We do take our vacations, right? Or we call them flex meals, you know?
Yeah.
But I guess, like you said, you know, for me, I have three big bags of Reese's cups in my big box freezer in my garage. Right. I know that they're there. I'm not going for them though. Like, I don't even know when the last time I had one was, but like you said, though, if they cannot do that, you know, if they know that something's there and they're going to go for it, it's probably just best not to have it. Right.
Yeah. And you can be weak then at times when you have a few pints or a glass of wine, or, you know, your willpower goes down when you're after drinking. So it can be dangerous, like, for that.
For sure.
Yeah. I still do enjoy alcohol. I still enjoy whiskeys and, you know, glass of wine with my wife, and going out to the pub with my friends for a pint of Guinness, that kind of stuff. I drink. But I know that, you know, a lot of people blame drink for putting on body fat, but it's really the willpower drops, and then you go and get fast food afterwards. That's kind of major thing, I think. Now, there are high calories in alcohol, but it's more likely the big bucket of southern fried chicken you got after, that's the problem, you know?
Exactly. So I also enjoy alcohol. What do you like to drink?
I like whiskey straight. That's my kind of, but I'd like, obviously you have to be careful not to overdo
it. Right. Yeah.
I like a good, I like Jack Daniels, actually. It's a lovely, I find that nice. You know, I have a nice 100 proof one at the moment, which is, you can sip away on that and it gives you a nice kick.
Nice. It warms you up too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? Yeah. What are your thoughts on? So you had mentioned a minute ago, you said the higher fat in the morning, the lower fat in the evening.
Yeah.
I've personally, do you feel with the carbohydrates later? So I've kind of heard different things with this, right? You know, some people will say now, when the bodybuilding diet or the fitness diet, you know, the one that I was on was similar to what you were on, right? It was chicken, tuna, rice, you know, that type of stuff. I've heard things, you know, if you're going to have carbs, to have them in the evening for several reasons, right? I've even heard like, you know, if there's a blood sugar dip in the middle of the night, you know, that kind of helps with that. I've also heard, you know, the opposite, but so for you personally, do you feel that it works better for you having the carbs later in the day?
Yeah, the main reason I do that is mostly because I train in the evenings.
There you go.
Yeah. But I have heard that it's good for sleep as well, apparently. Yeah. This is to do with something to do with insulin and getting tryptophan into your brain or something around that. And I can't remember the exact science of it, but there's something around that. But for me, it's typically the training. So I might have oats with these proteins, moody kind of thing, or overnight oats. I might have that even. So raspberries, Greek yogurt, some protein powder, and oats. Not a huge amount of oats, just enough, maybe 50 grams or something like that, you know.
Around training time?
Around training time, yeah. So I'd have that maybe an hour before training, and it's just to get a bit of, you know, the muscles ready for, and having blood, having that sugar going around them, and so that you're able to train for a bit longer. Now, I know that if you're keto and you're creating ketones or whatever, that it will be probably very similar, but it's just the side of diet I'm on. Because I do have a bit of alcohol, I don't want to be kicking in and out of, you know, all the time.
Right.
So I'm kind of more in that way, but I will at times. I could go for a week and not eat carbs at sometimes, or, you know, I could go, you know, so it's, you know, just, I think it just suits my lifestyle better to have some carbs in the diet.
Yeah.
But it's not like 60% carbs, if you know what I mean. It might be 30% kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah. And I think that's wise, you know what I mean? Especially around training. Again, obviously, one of the things I've been doing recently, Kian, with diet is, you know, my wife and I, for about 7 months, we did every weekend, we did a two day fast. Now I typically for years and years, I was one meal a day, sometimes maybe two a day. And I started noticing, now I don't know if I just needed more food or I needed more carbohydrates, but I started getting like these, like my sleep was starting to get lousy a little bit. I was getting like these muscle twitches. I thought it was like an electrolyte thing. So we stopped the 2 day fast every week. And, I started eating more carbs, but just around the training times, and those things went away. So, you know, I think for somebody like you, right, who's a very active guy who does these things, you know, if you were an obese type 2 diabetic, obviously this wouldn't be the case, but, I think obviously too, there's a lot of personal things that people have to take into consideration as well, right?
Exactly. And that would be down to the nutritionist or the doctor to talk to an individual about their specific needs. Like I talk in general, really, about this carb and fat combination being the trigger for it. So I'm a kind of a 3 square meal a day kind of guy, you know, but just taking into account, and I really enjoy my food. I really, really enjoy it. I don't want to be, I don't think his diet is sustainable. Like the diet I was on when I was a kid, cutting out all fat and just miserable, you know, it's a miserable life. So I want to be able to enjoy the food that I eat. And like, there's nothing that I enjoy more than I get giddy actually when I eat a nice bit of fried up salmon or something like that, you know, I put a pepper and salt and lemon on it. And it's so delicious, like, you know, it's nicer than junk food, you know.
Yeah.
And same with steak, but with a steak, bit of garlic, salt, some pepper, fry it up in lard.
Heck yeah.
Grill it to make the fat crispy, and you know, food like that is delicious, you know. So I like in the salads I do have all the, you know, the colorful veg. And a lot of people are going, you know, there's people who are negative about veg as well, you know, these days, but I don't see a problem with it once you have no underlying issues with oxalates and things like that, you know. So I think once you have that balance in your diet, you're not just eating one thing all the time. Your body can handle it better. I think if you overload on a single food, that's when problems kind of occur. Because if you have an intolerance or something, they can build up, and you know. So just, I think the balanced diet is the way to go. But the balance in the modern diet, there is no balance. It's all carbs and fats because that's what sells.
Right.
You know.
Yes. I tell you what, I did the, as an experiment, I was on a carnivore diet. I think I did it for about, I think it was 16 or 17 months. I did it. I don't know that I felt different. You know, I didn't lose any weight. I think for me personally, Kian, is that the things that I know that are going to make me overeat, I avoid. Is basically it. You know, I don't have a problem with many vegetables. There are a couple of that upset my stomach.
Yeah.
Just like a couple, literally. But besides that, I eat them, you know what I mean? I feel fine eating them. But I think in the context of overeating, that's why I love guys like you and other people that talk about the hunger thing and overeating, because I don't know, you know, I say that anybody, you could probably do any diet for 30 days, right? I mean, at least, I mean, there are people that go 30 days without eating food at all. But I think sustainability, especially if you want to make it a lifestyle, is most important. And I can't live off of, you know, I can't live off of chicken breast and rice, you know what I mean, long term. But I think it's good. Like I'm a big fan of the protein sparing modified fasting. I think that that's great, you know, if you want to lose a bunch of weight. But I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah. There's like, if I think for people who are very overweight, I think they can, I think something like keto is a brilliant way of getting, because especially if somebody enjoys meat, you know, it's a very easy diet, I think, for. And like if you think about say someone who's 25 years old and quite heavy, if they've eaten the standard diet with high carbon fat for 25 years, that's 100 years of winters they've eaten for. If you think of it that way, you know. Yeah. So how do you undo winter? You eat it for a different season. And I think the ketogenic diet is more like it's actually more like a winter diet, where animals were fat after the long summer and autumn. And now they're eating animals during the winter time. So the body then in the winter time is like, we're coming into spring now. You know, the animals are actually getting leaner as you go. So the body is kind of gradually then going from a keto style diet into a more springtime diet, which is the bodybuilder style diet, if you get me.
Yeah.
So if you would just eat keto statically for, you know, a year or 2 years, whatever, it can be probably very helpful for somebody who has had all this autumn style diet, like we're eating carbs and fats for 20 years, for their whole lives basically. So to undo it, I think it can be an easy way. So I think that's where the paleo diet is really strong, because it's not quite keto, but it's on that kind of path, if you know what I mean, where you're looking at the grains, you're looking at the sugars and things like that, and you're still having a balanced diet. But it's, you know, so I think that's a really good starter diet for someone who's heavy is look at the paleo style diet, you know. And I would look at, there's a brilliant book by Stanley Eaton who's kind of studied, you know, Stone Age diets basically, essentially. And he, it's the Paleolithic prescription, it's called. And this predated the paleo diet itself. And what he wrote in that book was brilliant. And then another guy called James B. Neal, who came up with this concept of the thrifty genotype. He referenced Eaton's work, saying that the modern, you know, he called it the Paleolithic prescription, where you're, you know, that's Stanley's work, but he's referencing that, saying this is how you, you know, we're an ancient machine living in a modern world. So what we have to do is to simulate how our ancestors adapted to nature. And that comes in the form of work and what you eat as well.
Yeah.
So the work part of it, I think obviously if you're living in a forest somewhere, you're cutting down trees, you're making fires, you're hunting for food, so you're sprinting, you're tracking around using cardio. So if you can, more of that you can simulate, the closer we get to what we're designed to do in the first place, you know. And like, we're okay, last few hundred years, maybe 1,000 years, we're more farming, we're better preserving things and so on and so forth. But 1,000 years in, or how you know, millions of years of history in terms of how we adapted to the modern world, it's only a minute, like a second even. So we haven't adapted to the modern. We can't adapt to it, you know, unless there's some scientist comes up with a way of injecting us with something that will turn us into a different type of creature where we can actually handle this type of diet. So that's not gonna happen anytime soon. Right. I don't think it's a good idea either to mess with nature in that way. So right. I just think we should look at what, you know, look at tradition. Like even 50 years ago, when I was young, we would eat potatoes when they came out. They go off, you know, in the wintertime, old potatoes, and nobody ate them as much. So when the new potatoes came out, everyone was like, oh yeah, the new potatoes are out, let's eat some potatoes. You know, same with apples. You wouldn't have gotten Golden Delicious in the, you know, they would have been not very nice. So nowadays it's different though, because we, you know, planes are going overhead and, you know, things are frozen, and it's just going, you know, you can eat any food from any place on planet Earth, anywhere, essentially, right. You know? So I think it's just, it's a free for all at the moment, and we never thought about it. Like, we just having the party, and we haven't thought about the consequences of the party. Like, and so you see, the problems that are out there. It's like 2/3 of people are obese or overweight, across the, and obesity is a bigger problem than malnutrition. So, you know, there's something a bit wrong in a major way, and you know, we can fix it. It's just being smart. You know, I think that's the analyze it and look at it and use your logic and see what's the problem. Where did you adapt? What was the food like for your ethnicity, say, and maybe apply some of that to the modern day. And that comes in the form of work, training, cardio, getting around. You know, we sit at the desk now in dark all year round. Like, even in the summertime, people are working 8 hour, 9 hour days. It's not moving, you know, and so they're not getting the vitamin D, they're not getting the exercise, the cardio, and they're eating shite.
You know? Right. You know, it really is something that when you put it that way, especially now, right, over the past whatever year and a half, you literally do not have to leave your house. If you work from home, you can have food. One of the people that lived down the street from me, I'm not kidding you, this is somebody who lives 50 yards from me. I didn't see them for about 8 months. And these are my neighbors. And every I think it was once a week, I'd go out and get in my Jeep. I'd go to clinic. I would look once a week on Wednesdays, they'd have a big on their front porch, a bunch of food that they had delivered. Right. I don't know what they were eating. I guess that's none of my business. Right. But I'm saying the world that we live in now, you don't have to leave your house.
Yeah.
You don't have to leave your house to work, to eat. I mean, if you train, you can train at home. I get that. But man, like being out in nature and living in it, man, you know, like I see the pictures that you post of that beautiful scenery, man. Like that's the way to be, brother.
Totally, totally. Getting out into the seaside, if you're near the coast, go to rivers, go to mountains, wherever you're near, even if you're in flat land, just go walk and, you know, you'll find some beauty spots everywhere, yeah. You know, and get outside and get that vitamin D, like pull your sleeves up and get, you know, wear shorts, whatever, you know, depending on the weather, obviously.
Right.
But getting outside is totally, you know, one of the things I do, if it's dark and if it's like, you know, I'm in the shed here. So one of the things working from home is you can basically do anything you like, and you're not going to be judged for what you're doing. So right. I have an alarm set on my phone to go off every hour. And turn on some 70s disco music and just kind of bounce around a bit. It's fun.
There you go, man. What a great idea that is, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'm not a good skipper, you know, for so just jump around as if, you know, put on some House of Pain or something and jump around, you know.
What a good idea. Yeah. So Kian, where can people find you and kind of what we're talking about today? You know, any resources or anything like that? Where can they go?
Yeah, so there's a few places they can go. I can obviously go I'm on Twitter is mainly where I post, but I have a website, don'teatforwinter.com, where you can check out the concept. And there's a tool that I'm a programmer, but I actually never told you that I'm a programmer. My main job is a software engineer.
Nice.
And it's been like 25 years, and I basically took the concept of the Don't Eat for Winter thing and put it into a tool called it's on a website called defodiet.com, but it's, you can get to it from don'teatforwinter.com. And what you do is you can plug in the carb, fat, protein in a food, and it will tell you how close it is to this autumnal combination formula. And like that, I put my heart and soul into that one, along with the book Don't Eat for Winter.
Yes.
So it's like a companion to it. It's like the knowledge of Don't Eat for Winter in a bit of software. And it's free to you. Anyone can go to it online. But what's cool in it is that the USDA database, there's a food database with the USDA, and they have already broken down like maybe 10,000 foods with their carb, fat, and protein content. And so you can kind of organize foods based on how close they are to this winter formula or how far away it is. So it's kind of an experimental little tool just to understand the concept a bit more and see how foods fit into it. And it'll show you like a triangle then. The triangle is... I never said the actual formula itself. It's like, it's 53% fat, 41% carb, and 6% protein. So anything like it, that's the kind of the signature of the food that I used for that was the acorn, which was the most abundant food source in autumn. And Native Americans used to make foods with acorns. You know, humans all over the planet used to make foods with this, but it's a main food source for like pigs, bears, squirrels, and so on and so forth. They eat these foods. Humans have to process them a little bit to, you know, and processing is literally leave them soak in water for a few days. But the carb, fat, and protein combination in those is exactly what a lot of modern day foods match nearly down to, like, ridiculously closely. So pizza, ice cream, chocolates, they all match this formula. So I think that we're programmed based on the acorn. And another food that matches it almost exactly is human breast milk. You know?
Yeah.
So it's the ultimate fattening formula, I think, from a multiple point of view. But firstly, appetite, and then obviously what's in it then as well. It's carb, fat, all the energy you need, and the probably the precise amount of protein you need for survival as well.
Right.
You know.
That's very cool, man. Very cool. So that website, I wrote it, says don'teatforwinter.com. And also, Kian, you're Wellboy on Twitter, right? At Wellboy?
Well, yeah, at Wellboy, yeah.
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay, cool. Very cool stuff, my brother. I'll tell you what, before we head off, is there anything else that you can think of? I'll tell you what, let me ask you this. If there was one thing, I guess if we're talking about nutrition, there's one thing that you could tell people, if you had a platform, like an enormous platform, if somebody gave you, you know, 30 seconds of national or worldwide television, what would you tell them about nutrition? What would you just say?
Oh, that's a good question. First, look after the amount of protein you eat. Two, lift weights. And three, look after your heart. So get out into nature. Perfect. And, you know.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, Kian, I greatly appreciate you coming on, my friend. Hang tight for a second. I want to chat with you afterwards. Guys, listen, thank you for listening. Like you said, you can find Kian at don'teatforwinter.com or at Wellboy on Twitter. Kian, thank you, my brother. It was great chatting with you, man.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
Okay, buddy. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.